Welcome to Syntax on this Monday Hasty Treat. We are going to dial in our focus and scope our thoughts into the native CSS scoping API at Scope. We're going to be talking all about what you need to know about this thing, how it works, and some really, really, really cool things that it allows you to accomplish. I'm actually, after looking over the notes for this episode, I'm distraught that I'm not using this all over right now. So we're going to be talking all about Scope. And with me, as always, is Wes Boss. What's up, Wes?
Not too much. I'm excited to talk about Scope here. It's going to be a fairly quick episode. There's not really a whole lot to it, but it's certainly something that the audience should know about as it's coming down the pipe.
Yeah, I'm Scott Tolinsky, by the way. I did not say that. I'm also coming down the pipe. I am getting my day ready here. But you know what's also coming down the pipe, Wes, with me?
What?
As well as Scope? Sentry. Sentry's new features.
Errors.
Lots of them. In fact, that's one of the things that we were the most curious about when we talked to the folks at Sentry. How do you deal with so many things coming through those tubes? But this podcast is presented by Sentry, and Sentry is a wonderful way to track how your application, your website, your stuff is working at any given time. Collect the bugs, solve those bugs, fix your problems, move on. So let's move on and talk about Scope. Wes, you want to hit us with the whys?
Yes. So scoping your CSS is nothing new. We've had many ways to scope our CSS, both from like naming conventions all the way over to like lots of things like the Svelte kit has scoping built in. However, like all good things, they eventually get added to the language, and they've been trying to add scoping to the language for a long time. There was a scoped attribute on the style tag for a while, and that got scrapped. And it looks like finally we are going with the @scope rule. So the reason why I think this is kind of interesting is because like scoping is something all of us need to do. We've all run into applications where you have lots and lots of global CSS, and that CSS applies to absolutely everything on the page. And it's kind of nice in some cases where it cascades all the way down, but you often end up in places where you can't just take components out of your website and have them sort of live on their own and have the CSS sort of be coupled with them. And scoping CSS allows us to do that. You're not going to have styles that leak outside of where they're supposed to go. CSS scoping, there's no need for complex naming conventions. So BEM was a very popular one where you would name thing as a block, element modifier. You'd have these really long class names on it. And it was a great way to sort of keep your CSS modular and be able to scope it to what it exists. But you don't need any of that stuff with it. You don't need to add a million classes to everything. You can simply just write very simple CSS selectors, often element selectors like P or H2, to actually target the element that you want.
Yeah. And I have a little bit of a hot take here.
Give it to me.
Yeah, this is my hot take around this subject. Many of the tools that people like and are just, you know, in love with in their process for working in CSS are only liked as much as they are because they make scoping easy. I think scoping in CSS is the one problem that people have a hard time with in CSS, and lots of tools, the main problem that they're solving is scoping, whether that's CSS and JS, or even like Tailwind, right? Co-locating your styles in places. Those are, at the end of the day, might not seem like scoping issues, but they're almost all scoping issues. And so to me, @scope is my most requested CSS feature right now. I gotta have this thing for a number of reasons. And actually, this is I found this while looking. There was an old API that you have to use the Wayback Machine to look at, called Scoped, an attribute on CSS.
It was that's what attribute. I was referencing earlier.
Oh, you referenced it earlier. I'm sorry, I missed that part. So this was something that had been considered before. And I think at one point, scoping your CSS tightly was seen as maybe like not the right way to do it. But as we've evolved into these component-based flows, where your components kind of own their styles.
Yeah.
Scoping just makes more and more sense.
I agree. Especially like you see like a, sometimes you open up a storybook, which is like a UI for viewing your components and building your components in isolation. And it's just like, ah, damn, that's so nice that these, this component looks exactly the same if you put it in a blank HTML page as if you were to put it in your application. Because I feel like that's where like websites start to rot, where you take a component from, like I have this on some of my course websites, like I'll take a button out of one of the sites and put it into another one and it'll look slightly different. Like, oh yeah, shoot, like it didn't inherit the style because it's not on this page. And that's how like style rot starts to happen. So I'm a big fan of this. So how does it work? Well, we're going to throw some screenshots up on the video podcast as well. If you're on Spotify, you should be able to just switch to the video and back to audio. If you're driving, please don't do that, but I'll describe it as well. The way that it works is you have an at scope. So no different than at media. You open up a scope block with at scope, and then you give it a selector. You don't have to give it a selector. I'll talk about that in just a second. But if you want to say, all right, if you have a card, I want to say at scope, you have to have the parentheses in my experience dot card. And what that does is it opens up a scoping block for the elements that match that selector. Then inside of that scoping block, any CSS you can imagine, with the exception of one thing, I'll talk about that in a second. So any CSS you dump inside of that scope block will only be applied to the element that is selected in that specific scope. And you don't have to, this is a little bit, you might be saying, ah, well, how is that different than nesting? It's a little bit different than nesting in that you aren't making these crazy long complex selectors. With nesting, you have dot card space P. And with CSS scope, you simply just have paragraph selector, and that will apply to any paragraphs that are inside of my card scope. And I think that's pretty neat that you just, I find the same thing with Svelte as well. It's like, oh, it's beautiful. You don't have to like add classes to everything. You just select the element. You can add classes to stuff. There's nothing wrong with adding classes to things. But if you just want to style all the paragraphs, or you want to style the one unordered list in that component, you can.
Yeah. And man, if you're working in a component-based workflow, this will all feel like a breath of fresh air, the same way that it did the first time you did styles in Svelte, because that is such a nice way to be. It's a nice way to say, in this thing that I'm working in right now, I would like to apply the styles to this and only this. And
yeah,
there's something so great about that. So
one cool thing, ever since I read this, I'm like, damn, I love that. And it's the idea of not having to specify a selector for your scope. And the idea is that you have a component. And when I say a component, you have a element like a div. And if you put a style tag inside of that div with a scope block into it, the browser will figure out, oh, they didn't tell me what the name of the scope was, so I'm just going to scope it to whatever the parent of the style tag is. So you can just, very similar to in Svelte, how you have a component and you have a style tag next to it in the same file, you could just say, all right, add scope. And you can apply the CSS, and it will only be applied to the elements inside of the parent card. And I think that's so cool because you can make these like super portable little pieces of HTML that have the CSS assigned to it without having to be like, all right, well, make sure you add this specific class. You don't need any classes. You don't need anything like that.
Yeah, this to me is the space that I'm most interested in. I'm working on some stuff right now just using straight HTML template tags. And yep. Not actual template tags, but just template tag literals of HTML. And how awesome would it be to just throw a style in there? That is almost, you get the power of a Svelte style component, where you have that same exact interaction without the compilation step.
Mm. Yeah, there's no build step. I didn't even say that. Thank you, Scott.
That is awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm jazzed up right now.
It's so cool. And sort of while I'm on that thought of having scope CSS inside of an element, pseudo inline hover styles.
Yes.
One thing.
Yes.
one reason why people absolutely love Tailwind and don't like inline styles is because inline styles, like style equals quotes, they're limited in that there's a whole chunk of CSS that you can't do in an inline style. You can't do hover styles. You can't do media queries. You can't do container queries.
Has.
You can't do has. You can't do parent-child selectors, right? You can't do any of that. And Tailwind makes all of that possible, which is amazing. And I'm not saying this is going to replace Tailwind. It's probably not, because the Tailwind syntax is much nicer. But look at this example where you have a button and you want to add a hover background to that button. How do you do that in CSS? Well, you make a class, you put a style tag below it, and you give it a class. You say, all right, when this class is hovered, so now you can just stick a style tag in the freaking button and say add scope, and then you can select the button itself with the colon scope selector.
Oh,
so man. Colon scope, colon hover, background red. And it's just like, you can do that with media queries. You can do it with container queries. You can do it with any of CSS, and it will just be scoped to that specific element.
Yeah, I'm resisting the urge to make a colon scoping joke. Are you above the age of 40? Get your colon scoped.
Get your colon scoped.
Yeah, I was trying really hard not to do that, but I had to do it.
All right, now you might be saying, okay, Wes, that's dumb. All of that stuff, I don't have those problems that solves.
Yeah,
here's a really cool thing. Donut scope. And we talked about this with Bramis, and when he had him on the podcast, is CSS donut scope will allow you to specify where the scope starts. Of course, a class can say, all right, apply these styles to this class, and then any images within that class, you want to do something. The problem becomes with the C of cascade of CSS. The C in CSS stands for cascading, meaning that any CSS you apply at the parent will automatically scope all the way down. And one problem we have in the syntax website is variables do this. You set a variable at a very high level. There's no way to stop that variable from going all the way down unless you were to reinitialize it, right? So if you have a card inside of a card, or you have a dark sidebar with a light mode card inside of that, the problem is that when you redefine a variable at one level, the variables all the way down the DOM tree get overwritten. With donut scope, it's going to allow us to stop the cascade at a specific spot. So you say at scope card 2 dot callout. So basically you're saying this is where it starts, the end of the donut, and this is where it ends, the whole of the donut. And I was trying to make like a... When I was doing demos for this, I called it Timbit scope, but...
It's like the opposite, isn't it? Aren't Timbits the center?
Yeah, Timbit scope would be the inside. So
invert Timbit scope.
Inverted Timbit scope. Yeah. I don't know if everyone would get that. As a Canadian podcast, we need to tell everybody that in... What do you call them in the States? Donut holes?
Donut holes, yes. We call them donut holes from Dunkin', I believe. I did grow up with Tim Hortons around the block, so...
You know what a Timbit is.
I'm familiar.
Yeah, so donut scope is pretty nifty. And I can see ourselves using this in components, being like scope it from this card to and then like a child, right? So you might want to or to the next scope. Like I could also imagine like every single time you have a component, you give it like a class of component. You're like, all right, scope it from here until you hit the next component, and then stop. And then that component will have its own scope. Don't apply it to any children. The only like one weird thing is that if you have a background and you have a nested component, it's not going to like punch out the background. So you'd have to reset the background.
Mm. It would be nice if you had, in addition to the colon scope, if you had like a colon end scope. Because if you were saying, so you could say that, oh no, wait. Never mind. That doesn't track. Ignore what
I'm saying. Yeah, because you can do it with all the... And all of this plays nicely with CSS, like the ampersands. So the ampersand will give you the parent selector, and you can use has. And all of the new CSS stuff, in addition, works well with this. So you have really fine-grained control over the elements that you are selecting. Last thing, browser support. It's in Chrome. Just hit Safari Technical Preview. So it will, we don't know if they're just like testing it out or whatnot and trying to find things. There's one limitation we did find. Adam Wathen of Tailwind was actually investigating this, because I'm sure he's got lots of scoping issues that can be fixed by this. Keyframes must be global. So if you want to generate a specific keyframe for a specific element, it has to have still has to have a unique name. And then you often, to generate a unique name, you have to use JavaScript. So it would be neat if you could scope keyframes. But I think the fix for that is at property in CSS. An at property in CSS will allow us to specify the type of a CSS variable. And that will then allow us to switch values of a keyframe. So you could say, like, you could have a length one, you could set the width or the height of something, and simply updating the variable will make the keyframe update itself, which is not something that works right now unless you use at property.
Everything is awesome about this. The keyframe thing, I don't have that many keyframe issues overall.
No, me either.
But, I would imagine people who are doing really complex animations do. You know, I've seen some interesting new animation libraries that are doing like Crazy Town animations. Not like Butterfly Crazy Town, but just like you've entered Crazy Town. And the support for this, like you said, Chrome, yes. Safari Tech Preview, Firefox, no. The sad story here is that there's not a lot of good ways to compile or polyfill this. There are ways to do scope CSS currently in JavaScript. But, you know, this might be one of those ones you just have to wait for, which is sad for me. I did see on this Firefox tip, just 3 days ago, there's been some movement on here. Safari announced that it will be added in 17.4. So it will be coming this year-ish. I even have 17.4 on my iPhone right now as the first release candidate or beta or whatever. So it is coming to Safari very soon. And Mozilla has moved it to the ready-to-add phase here. So posted a link to this, standards positions. It is something that they're going to be doing. But who knows what their timeline is.
I'm actually surprised there's not a polyfill for it, because maybe
there's a polyfill for scoped, but not for this.
Yeah. Cause like you could polyfill the scoping with just adding classes, right? Like you back.
Yeah.
But could you do this? You couldn't stop it. You know, you probably couldn't stop it. And then you throw CSS variables in there and maybe not. So
where's Jonathan Neal?
We'll have to see. Yeah. He probably is had a stab at it. But that's it. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we will catch you later.
Peace.
Peace.